Hello.
Good morning, how you doing?
You're not too bad. I'm just I installed Mojave last night, so
I saw on Twitter.
so I'm just dealing with lots of permission dialogues that keep popping up for things like Skype. Skype wants to use your microphone, and call recorder needed updating because Skype was out of it was all yeah I was just panicking a little bit because I thought, oh my God, everything's going to stop working, but it seems to be good. Yeah, I'm in this weird dark mode. Everything looks a bit odd, but I've just been playing
Oh,
around with the
can I have that dark mode?
I've just been playing around with the Marzipan apps, which are really nice. They certainly don't look like iOS
No. I
apps.
mean, they. When you find the date spinners, they do.
Yes, I heard about that. What was that in? Which app was that? I can't remember.
I think it's the home app. I think
Oh, it's home, isn't it? Yes,
you
that's
can
the one
set
I
some
forget.
timers or something in there,
That's the one
and
I was
so they pop
forgetting.
up. Yeah, I've not installed Mojave yet, just because. I could put it on my laptop, but I don't really do anything on my laptop, so there's not much point. I'm not going to be able to test any of the new stuff that's there. And I don't feel like installing it on my Mac Pro because I need that to work. And so if there is some problem with Xcode on Mojave or something like that, it's just going to cause problems. Like, I don't know if Xcode 9 works on Mojave because oftentimes it doesn't. You can only use like Xcode 10 or like the latest version of Xcode, I should say. And you can't submit apps to the App Store with the beta version of Xcode. So I'm always like, no, I won't bother installing the macOS updates. Because I don't really need to. There's nothing in there that I care about enough to test it. Like iOS 12, sure, because as an iOS developer, you've got to build stuff with the new technology, but not so much the Mac.
It's only a month away, and I thought I could wait, but we're about to go on holiday for a couple of weeks, so I thought, what better time to screw my machine up than that? But yeah, I mean, I yeah, like yeah, I didn't need to install it. I mean, the app submission stuff, I've got a workaround for that anyway, so I can submit if I need to, but I'm not really submitting any live apps right now. There might be one coming up, but it's sort of got to beta 5, and so and the stuff I was hearing was it seems fine and everything, and I back up everything. I do Time Machine. Worst case scenario is I do a restore, and it takes a couple of hours to get my machine back, so it's not the end of the world. So I just thought, stuff it, I might as well do it. But
Yeah,
it
you
looks
might as
quite,
well.
yeah, it seems quite nice. It seems fine. I mean, iOS 12's been amazing. I don't think I've had any. I can't remember. I think I've had two glitches with iOS 12. One was the first beta I installed, I think, was beta 3, and the Photos app crashed on launch. So every time you launch Photos, it
Oh,
just crashed.
yeah.
And the workaround was to say to Siri, "Show me today's photos," or something, and then it would launch, and then you could go out and go back, and it would be fine. It was just really weird. And that was the only glitch I had. That was one glitch, and then the other glitch was on editing photos. So I took a photo, hit edit, and the auto button where you can boost it. Sometimes when I hit that boost button, it would just like take 3 or 4 seconds for the boost button light to change, and the actual photo to update. And that was it. Which is all gone now. It's all fine now. But I've not had any. I remember the betas of 11 and 10 and everything. Skype would always fail on beta 1. So every time you launch Skype, it would just
Oh,
crash.
yeah. Banking
And
apps were the worst.
yeah,
They would
banking apps.
always never work.
So what I did this time is I've got a spare 7. So I installed the 12 beta first on that when I did beta 3. And I just went into all my main apps, like HSBC and stuff, and just tested them out and just made sure they were all fine. And then I went for it. And it's been really good. I'm really pleased with it. I love the notification stuff where it just
Oh, it's
groups them
so
and.
much better. So much better. Especially for Ring cameras if you have motion detection on, which I do. It's so much better having them just grouped together. Although it's super weird that there's still no like clear all notifications. There is if you swipe up in order to have like the clear the old ones, and you can long press on that and do clear all notifications, which removes the one above it as well. But if you only have like three or four notifications, there's no way of removing all four at once. You have to manually swipe and delete, which is so bollocks. Like, I don't know why they can't fix the simplest fucking thing with notifications. Like, why is it so terrible? I don't know. It's such a small thing, but it pisses me off on a daily basis.
Yeah,
Literally,
exactly.
every time I pick my phone up, it's like, oh, there's three notifications. Like, I want to get rid of those. No. I can do it on my Apple Watch, but not on the lock screen.
Yeah, that's weird. So if I unlock the app and then scroll down on the left, I get some notifications at the top that have no clear button option. Then if I scroll down, I get notification center underneath, and that does have a clear.
And that will clear the ones above, but if you only have a couple
Oh,
of
it's
new
weird.
ones, then that doesn't exist because there is no bit underneath. You just get the top three or four notifications and that's it. And then you can't clear them. You have to do it manually for each one, which was an annoying thing in iOS 11, but it's even more annoying in iOS 12 when they've done all this work on notifications.
And I thought Notification Center, I thought the changes there were, because you know that weird thing you could get sometimes where you get a notification come in, you see the notification on your phone pop up, and then obviously your phone turns off or sleeps or whatever, and then you click to see your notifications again, and it's not there, or you go into Notification Center and the notification that came in that you haven't actually tapped or looked at, you haven't done anything to acknowledge you've read it or seen it, is not there. You get these ones that go missing.
I can't remember where I've had it recently,
but there's situations where that's happened.
I only have it when there may be notifications and then you open the relevant app and then they all disappear from the Notification Center because it assumes that the app is handling it.
Okay.
I've had that happen before, which is annoying if you've got, let's say you're using something like WhatsApp, a conversation. I mean, that's a bad example because WhatsApp is going to clearly show you what's unread and what's not. But sometimes there are apps that send you a mixture of notifications and they don't have, for whatever reason, a grouped inbox or something internally. And then you just lose notifications. It's like, oh, don't know what that was. Never mind. Which, usually they're just marketing bollocks that you don't care about anyway. But sometimes it's important. But no, I mean, generally, iOS 12 is good. I mean, the notification stuff is better. I'm just complaining because it's just the one thing. It every single day irritates me. Every single day.
I stored it on my Mini. I haven't noticed any speed improvement. I mean, it's very fast, but the X was, or the 10 was fast anyway. But on the 7, I installed it on, and on the iPad Mini. My iPad Mini, I think, is the last iPad Mini released, and it was really slowing down, really, really bad. And 12 seems to be very snappy on it, so that's pretty cool. Pretty impressed.
I've not installed it on an iPad yet. I have the iPad Pro 12.9. I'm always funny with iPads. I rarely use them. I use my iPad purely for when I'm streaming Rocket League because I wrote an app to put in my scores and stuff, which then updates the lights on my wall. That is literally the only thing I use my iPad for. I used to have it so it synced music with my friend that I play games with as well, but
I've rewritten
that as a Mac app now. Because I a very, very long story, but I upgraded my sound card on my PC, and now I don't have two line imports, I only have one, so I couldn't have my Mac going in and my iPad going in, so now I rewrote the app for the Mac so that I can get music and various other bits coming through my PC headphones while I'm playing games on the PC. So I really don't use the iPad for much, but when this new one comes out, I will be getting it just because my iPad is very old now. It must be, 3 years old, I think. I remember it specifically because it was my... I was away in Tenerife for my 30th birthday, and that's when the Apple keynote was. And I was like, to my family that were there, I was like, we're going to dinner at about 8:30 tonight because there's a keynote. And there's just like me sat in my, I'm like all dressed up to go out for this nice dinner. I'm just sat in this hotel room with my laptop and a little glass of wine, just watching the keynote where they announced the the 12-inch MacBook and the iPad Pro 12.9-inch and the Apple Pencil and all that stuff. And I remember going down to dinner afterwards and being like, yeah, there's nothing there I want to buy. And then we got home and then I ordered everything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was like, going back to the day, I still remember the when the iPad was first launched, where Steve Jobs sat in that little chair and
showed it off.
And I think I need to look back at my tweets, but I think I was like, oh, it's just a big iPhone. Who the hell's going to buy that? It's bloody ridiculous. It's just a, it's a big iPhone. No one wants to carry that big lump around. And then I ended up, didn't even wait for the UK release. I bought a couple of weeks in the US. I paid somebody to ship it over. Someone had got it from the States. They were selling it in the UK. My extravagance was I paid a biker to go and get it. So I paid a courier like £100 to go and get this already overpriced iPad to bring it to me and then deliver it back the same day or whatever. So
I definitely seem to remember paying about £900 for the first time.
Something like that. And it ran 4.1, I think, didn't it?
It was its own special version. Yeah. It was 4.3. It was iOS 4.3.
Oh, 4.3, okay.
Was it? I don't know. It was some weird variant of iOS. They were actually separate for quite a while.
Yes, yeah, they were.
So they were not... It wasn't the same version that you installed on your iPhone. It was like a separate... I guess it was the same code base and everything, but it was its own separate version. I don't think they were unified till iOS 5 came out. I'm going to say 4.3.
I've still got it, and I got the leather, you know, the sort of that case that you could get that you sort of stuck it inside, and it had the hard front on it, like the smart cover type front. So I've still got it, and I think I put a sticker on the back. So I had a sticker on the back of it, you know, full back sticker. So I think if I peeled that off, the back would be immaculate. You know, it would still be completely immaculate. And it's still in the case, and I haven't fired it up for years.
God, I guess they were running, huge. Remember the size of it? So
yes,
thick.
Well, it was thick, but it was also curved. Wasn't
massive.
It?
So you, it was curved. It was thick.
Yeah.
And it had a massive border around the screen.
Yeah, it was probably a centimeter thick at the edges. It's probably a centimeter thick at the edges. But if you laid it flat on a table on its back, it was probably half an inch off the. It probably sit half an inch off. Yeah, I mean, it was huge and heavy,
Very heavy. And then the second one made it smaller, and then the third one made it bigger again because they had to put so much more battery in to power the Retina screen.
Yeah, that was the iPad. Yeah, the iPad 3, wasn't it? The iPad 3.
The new iPad. Yes,
because that was the one that basically none of your chargers would actually work with it. And when you did find a charger that did work for it, it took about 4 hours to charge the damn thing. I remember, you know, plugging it in and thinking, why is this taking so long? And I was using an iPhone charger, like a low wattage charger or something, 5 watt, whatever it was. And
yeah,
it
you had to use the 12 watt.
Yeah, it took about 6 hours to charge the damn thing. But it charged it, because it was only drawing an amp or something. But it was, that was very strange. And that was replaced 6 months. That was the time when they replaced it.
Yeah, that was the 6 months later, the fourth gen, which had a lot of the problems.
And had the lightning port. That switched it to a lightning port one and
boosted. Oh, did it?
Yeah, I think it did.
I'm
pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it was that year that there was one where all of a sudden it changed to a lightning port, and it was the only one where they've basically released it like same year. They've done an update same year.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was
all the weirdness with like the iPad Mini. So then it was like, oh, you can have this smaller one that isn't Retina. It's like, no.
Yeah.
And I did. I went for it, and I was like, oh, I can cope with the non-Retina. I can cope with the non-Retina. And it's like, oh, this looks so horrible. But the form factor is so much better. And then it's like, no, can't deal with this anymore. iPad Air. That's the next one. And then I went for the next one I bought after that. I didn't bother with the Gen 2. I went straight up to the iPad Pro 12.9-inch. And that's all I've had since. So I'm due an update because the 12.9-inch iPad, I don't use it because it's massive. It's far too big. It's far too bulky. You can't hold it comfortably at all. Even with two hands, it's uncomfortable to hold. It's just too heavy. So I was very tempted by the 10.5-inch iPad. But I think this new one that we've seen leaked in iOS 12 Beta 5, the icon, the same as last year in iOS 11 when the iPhone 10 icon was revealed. The iPad icon has been revealed for the new iPad coming up. And the interesting thing is, while it has a very, very thin border, it doesn't have a home button, but it also doesn't have a notch. So I'm not quite sure how that is going to work. I don't get how that works.
Yeah, I'm guessing
surely you need either a home button or you need Face ID. You can't have neither unless they've
stuck a
Touch ID on the back.
Well, there is that weird, there's a schematic going around. Well, the first thing is it sounds like, excuse me, sounds like the camera's just probably at the top embedded in the bezel or whatever, or bezel. But that was the thing that annoyed me about that. I think I tweeted last night some sarcastic comment because everyone did that with the 10 where they went, you know, it's a bit bezel-less, bezel-less screen. Yeah, bezel-less, sarcastic. Bezel-less screen, and it's like it has got bezels. And then this was like the new iPad icons reveals an edge-to-edge screen. Well, no. Okay, edge-to-edge glass. It's not an edge-to-edge screen. Those black borders, you know, that's... They are bezels. Bezels,
also,
you can't say it's bezel-less.
Well, you can, because it's bezel, but...
Or bezel, whatever. Whatever.
The thing I don't get about it, though, is I wouldn't want an edge-to-edge screen. Like, an edge-to-edge screen, to me, is pointless, because you have to hold the phone. Like,
exactly,
unless you use it on a table, and even then, if it's edge-to-edge, it's going to curve. But I don't understand the Android phones where they have, like, the wraparound.
That's horrible.
It super weird. Super weird.
Yeah, I mean, the 12 inch is massive. Most of the time, it sits
close
on my desk.
13, isn't it? It's 12.9.
I've got it plugged in. I just usually sit it on my desk, and it acts as a second screen for things like watching Sky News or.
It's thicker and bigger than the MacBook.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
like the 12 inch MacBook, crazy.
The only times I've used it is when I don't I want to do something that involves maybe I'm writing something or I'm doing something where I want to use the keyboard and everything, you know, writing a blog or whatever. And I don't want to use my lappy. Like when I was in hospital with Rosie at Christmas, I used it as sort of my laptop to do stuff like that because, you know, 10-hour battery, you can just sit there and do stuff and have a little picture-in-picture playing or whatever. I know you could do all that on a Mac, but that's when I'd use it in that sort of replacement Mac-style mode. But otherwise, it stays on my desk and I use the 10.5 because the 10.5 compared to the 9.7, the 9.7 was okay with the little smart keyboard, but that little difference of sort of 9.7 to 10.5 with the keyboard just makes it much more comfortable to type on.
And yeah, so the keyboards were never great on the 9.7.
Yeah, it's really nice. And so these new icons seem to imply that what they're going to do is potentially keep the screen the same size on the 12, but reduce the physical size. So you'll still get that 12.9. I think the icons or the rumors were that the 10.5 will become the 11, it'll be called, because they'll basically make an 11-inch screen and slightly shrink the actual hardware. And then the 12.9 will stay 12.9, but just get smaller so that, you know, it will feel more comfortable to hold and probably lighter and things like that. But it should be interesting. But there was a schematic going around with this mystery thing on the back. I don't know if you saw that.
I've not seen that.
Okay, so there was a 3D, one of these, you know, whether you believe it or not, but it's one of these schematics that goes around. And it showed something on the – so first rumor was the smart connector was moving. So they were – I mean, one of the stupid rumors was the smart connector is now moving to the bottom of the device.
To the bottom. I'd heard that.
Yeah.
So
that it will be used in portrait only. It's like because they can't get the Face ID working landscape, therefore we'll have to use our iPads in a keyboard dock portrait, which is just the most ridiculous theory ever.
I can understand there being – two smart connectors, one on the side, one on the bottom. Because sometimes you do want to, like, if I'm dealing with email or dealing with any sort of typing, actually, I prefer my iPad to be in portrait. I'd much prefer it to be in portrait because
I'd love the choice.
You can see more. Yeah. But I can't see that they would go, smart connector is only going to be on the bottom. I can see it being both, but not solely the bottom.
So then there's this thing about what is this? There's a thing on the back that doesn't. It's not a circle, so it doesn't look like a Touch ID sensor. It looks more like an oval type shape, like a lozenge type shape, but slightly indented, right? Slightly indented, and it's literally, you know, just behind, like where the home button is now. If you imagine the exact opposite on the back, and then turn that home button into a lozenge type shape, a wide shape, that's what it looks like. So
interesting.
You know, they're theorizing: is this a different type of smart connector? Or one theory was, which I loved, I just love this one, because this is basically the Coke can standing, it's not the guy who said it, but it's the Coke can standing table type approach, right? This is the solution. So one solution was...
I don't care what it is, it's a piece of shit.
One solution is that the thing on the back is a Touch ID sensor, because that's what you'll use in landscape to unlock it, because the Face ID won't work in portrait, which I just love that theory. It's like, you know... we've done the Face ID, Tim. You know, it's working really well. Great. Does it work in landscape? No, it doesn't work in landscape. What are we going to do? I know. Let's put a Touch ID on the back, and then they can use that if it's in landscape.
So stupid. Face ID, like, I mean, let's just touch on this Face ID landscape thing for a minute. I mean, in my mind, there's no reason that Face ID could not work in landscape, because all it is an infrared blaster and a camera. Like, the infrared blaster in the promotional mock-ups they did, it seems to come out as a cone.
Yes.
So it's not like it's a rectangle that favours verticality more than width. It's a cone that just blasts out. So there's no reason it couldn't work on its side. It doesn't, because they didn't optimise it for that for the iPhone release, because they don't need to, because no one unlocks their phone on its side. But for the iPad, I don't see any reason why they couldn't have a single one that works in both orientations. And I'm pretty sure that one of these Patreon attention-seeking bastards dug into iOS 12 and found that there is like references to landscape Face ID and portrait Face ID, and that it can work in both. So I'm pretty sure that if this new iPad has Face ID, it will work in both dimensions, because otherwise it's going to be terrible. Like, why? You're not going to want to pick it up and unlock it, you know, a different way.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the whole point of the iPad, is that it works in both orientations. It's like been from the very beginning. You can have it either dimension when you pick it up. The lock screen isn't locked to a particular one. Yes, there are apps that are locked to certain dimensions because there are certain things you want to do in one orientation. But I can't ever imagine that they'd be like, oh yeah, the lock screen is now portrait only because of Face ID, because we couldn't bother to work out how to fix it. That's not an Apple way of doing things.
No, and it makes sense that, you know, you always get, like, iPads will come out with improvements that weren't in iPhones. Like, I think we got True Tone in iPads before we got it in, you know, iPhones, and what is it, ProMotion and stuff like that. Whether that's relevant on a phone is another issue. So it makes sense that if there's a hardware requirement to make it go landscape, well, then that's what they'll add to the iPad and most likely next month's iPhone. So because the rumors are about this bigger iPhone, you know, they're doing some potentially some 6.5-inch. So, you know, there'll be an iPhone 10 Plus, which has landscape support for, which will, you know, will support these extra features in landscape mode, like in messages, you see messages on the left, and in mail, you see a mail on the left, like the Plus does. And so that makes sense for them to say, to at the same time, upgrade the Face ID sort of system in the devices so that that will support landscape too. So I suspect we'll see an iPhone that will support landscape Face ID next month as one of its features, you know, because let's face it.
That's going to basically replace the iPad mini at the same
time. Yes, exactly. It doesn't look that much. What's interesting is it's, if you see the whether they're accurate or not, the sort of cases and all the things that get leaked, it doesn't look that much bigger. You know, it's one of those really subtle differences.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to think to myself, if this is all true, this speculation, if they do a 6.5-inch iPhone, am I going to go for that or am I going to stick with the current size?
Yeah.
Because I have flittered between the various size devices. Like I had the iPhone 6 Plus, then I went down to the iPhone 6S regular, and then I went for the iPhone 7 Plus, and then I went to the iPhone 8 regular, and then the iPhone 10. So I've sort of alternated between them each year, and I find them too big to be comfortable like in a back pocket. I famously broke my iPhone 10 glass twice with it falling out of my pocket until I put it in a case. So I'm like, not sure if I want to go for an extra large phone. But on the other hand, it would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, the Plus, I found the 8 Plus when I had the 8 Plus for that month just too big. It had crossed that little threshold where it was just too big. Whereas if you could take the same concept they did with the 10, which is take that Plus size screen but shrink the case a little bit, so you end up with something that is a little bigger than the 10, but not as big as a Plus physically, that might be all right, you know, because I like the 10 size.
Well, that's the current size, but I mean, this new one is presumably going to be bigger than the iPhone.
Well, yeah, that's 6. True, yeah.
If we take the Plus size phone, I mean, the iPhone 10 is the same pixel width.
That's true.
The iPhone 8, it's 750 pixels across. Well, actually, it's more than that because it's a 3x resolution rather than 2x. But for all intents and purposes, it's 375 points across. It's a better way of saying it. So it's the same as the iPhone 8 width-wise on the screen, at least. And then the height is more. Presumably, the iPhone 10.2. Sounds like a really bad clock, doesn't it? iPhone 10.2. It's presumably going to be the same number of pixels wide as the Plus models, but taller. So it would be a bigger device because it's going to be basically as the iPhone 5 was to the iPhone 4S, that is what the iPhone 10.2 would be to the iPhone 8 Plus. It's the same width, but slightly taller. And it may have slightly smaller bezels and all the rest of it. And no bottom because you've got the lack of a home button and all the rest of it. So it feels lighter, maybe, somehow, even though it's bigger. It doesn't feel quite as bulky because the size is different, but it's still going to be that size, but slightly taller.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I would think. Or, well, I mean, it could be the same. Where's my... If I look at my iPhone 10 next to my iPhone 8, I mean, they are pretty much the same size, but the iPhone 10 just removes the top and bottom and uses it all. So I imagine that the iPhone 10.2 would be exactly the same as the iPhone Plus. So if you found the Plus phone to be too big, it's going to be the same. There'll be more screen, but it's going to be physically the same size, would be my suggestion. I mean, the 10 is actually ever so slightly larger than the 8. Ever so slightly. But it feels so much bigger, like the screen, just because it takes up this less bezel, there's no top bit, there's no chin, as they call it. So it's, weird.
It's funny always going back, because my kids are using old 5S's, and it's always funny going back to like one of those to do something and just thinking, God, how did we ever... And the 5S has got the bigger screen, you know, it was the 4.
Oh, God, go to the 4S, my God.
Oh, or an old iPhone 3 or something, and it's like, how did this ever work?
Every time I use a small phone, I think to myself, like, I'm sure there was a James Bond, I think it was a book. Well, actually, it wasn't a book. It was an exchange of correspondence between Ian Fleming and someone who had written to him who was a gunmaker saying Bond would never use a Beretta. A Beretta is a lady's pistol. It's not a gun right. for a secret agent. This is the gun he should be using for this reason, this reason, this reason, this reason. And that's why he ended up with a Walther instead of the Beretta. And every time I pick up the iPhone 4S, I look at it and just think of it as a Beretta, a lady's pistol. Every time I look at it, I'm just like, this is like a handbag phone. This is tiny. This is horrendous. But yeah, I remember back in the day being like, oh my God, this 4S is amazing. Look at it with its Retina display and Siri.
I know. It is so bizarre going back, yeah. And I don't remember, I remember getting the iPhone 4 and thinking our Retina screen was just incredible. But just when we first got our iPhones, or I think the first one I ever got was actually an iPod. It was the iPod Touch.
Yeah, the iPod Touch. Yeah.
The very first one I've got somewhere. That's what I used to use because I had a Windows, you know, one of these crappy Windows mobiles for my phone. So that's what I used to use, go to hotspots and Cafe Nero's and basically use that to email and stuff because I loved it. But that was, using that, it was a great screen, you know, and everything was really lovely and crisp and stuff. But going to Retina, obviously,
compared to a Windows 10 phone.
You.
Well, not Windows 10. Windows Mobile.
But then going to a Retina device and then going back. And the only thing it doesn't bother me on is like my desktop monitor, because I've got one of these Dell widescreen monitors, one of those ultra fine ones. And that's the only thing that doesn't grate me, you know, because I'm a good enough distance away from, well, I'm like 2.5 feet or something away from it. So the pixels don't bother me. But otherwise, going from using the laptop in laptop mode to going to an old monitor, I'd be thinking, this is horrendous. But that's the only time.
Using an old laptop, like an old MacBook Air or something, it's horrible because you're that much close to it. My big worry when I moved away from the iMac 5K to the Mac Pro, because I'm just using an ultra-wide display, the resolution is decent enough that you could probably activate high DPI mode on it, but it would look awful. Only 1440 high, so you don't really want to halve that. That'd be awful. But I was really worried going from the iMac 5K to that the pixels would bother me, but they don't in the slightest. I do notice it sometimes because I have a 4K monitor in portrait to the left as well that is plugged in, and that is in high DPI mode. So when I look at that and look at text on it, it's like, damn, that text is crisp. And then I look at my other monitor and it's not quite as bright, it's not quite as nice, and the text isn't quite as clear. But most of the time on my big monitor, I'm in Xcode, and so I'm used to looking at mono-spaced fonts. So you're not really as concerned with like the curvatures and the look and feel of it. And I run the iPhone simulator on the 4K monitor, so it looks exactly the same as it does on the iPhone, in that everything is pixel doubled and smooth. So I tend to get away with it, and not that was definitely a concern of mine.
Yeah, I was looking at, now and again I look around for monitors. I do like this widescreen one. It's just really nice to get, you know, content side by side or whatever, if you've got like a simulator on it and then you've got code on the right or whatever. And there's just no equivalent, you know, any 5K or 4K monitors at the moment are just the normal 4x3 type size. Well, little widescreen, but they're not 16:9, sorry. They're not super wide like this. There was an LG one supposedly coming out that it was announced. There's supposed to be a 5K LG that's super wide. So I'd be interested in that, only because I want something that's going to have more, well, only if it does, but if it has like HDMI and other ports. So I don't want something like the normal Apple ones where it's like USB-C and that's all you get, because I want to be able to plug, you know, Xbox or whatever into it. But I'm pretty happy with this. I just bought my wife two monitors. She's got my old MacBook Pro. So she's been using a Vio, Sony Vio, for years. She's got iPads and stuff, but desktop-wise, whenever she's needed to do scanning or anything, she's used this Vio. I think I've mentioned it before. Whenever she comes in and turns it on, the fans kick in, like, immediately. It doesn't even wait to warm up. You know, it doesn't even wait to do work.
venting immediately because it knows the heat is coming.
the moment the screen comes on, it's like, oh, this is too much, and the fans kick in. You know, it's too bright. I was going to sell it, do my normal eBay thing, but then I figured it's, you know, about time to get her off that damn thing. So she's got a MacBook. She's got the old 2017 now MacBook Pro. But I had to replace her monitor because she's got this old Dell monitor on her desk that's, what was it, DVI? Remember DVI? The big wide white connector.
Oh, God, massive one.
And that, and it only goes up to, I think it can't go to like 1920 even, or anything bigger than like 1024 or something like that, or 1280. There's some limit, but basically it can't, you can't drive it any higher than that. So yeah, basically replace that with a Dell, got her a normal size 16.9. But then she's got this, she's just finally sorted out this craft room of hers, which she's decided she's going to try and do some YouTube videos of something or other. And the kids are starting to get into it, which is quite funny, doing like reviews of iPad games and things. So I've nice. I've actually bought her another monitor, because now she can move between the office and that room seamlessly. You know, just literally plug one USB-C in, and she's got monitor set up and a hub and cameras and things, whatever she needs set up. So it's quite cool. Been expensive nice. Week though for deliveries and things, but yeah.
Speaking of your kids doing reviews of games, let's talk about the imminent death of Touch Arcade.
Oh yes, this is to do with the Apple Seamless affiliate way. Program, which yeah, brilliant. I didn't even know this was a thing. I think I knew this was a thing, that they did this affiliate link stuff.
Yeah, because it got, but got quite a lot of news last year, the year before. Not long ago, because it used to be 7%, and then they slashed it to 2.5%. And
it used to be what,
had a moan about it. They used to get 7% for each sale. Okay. So if you clicked on a game on the Touch Arcade website and they went and bought it on the iTunes store, then they would get 7% of the cost of the game.
Right.
It's like a kickback, you know, standard affiliate scheme thing. And then Apple slashed the rate from 7% to 2.5%. I think it was a year ago, 2 years ago, and people kicked off then, and then they reversed course. They were like, oh, sorry, no, that wasn't on apps. That was just on in-app purchases, which was a really bullshitty excuse. It did not seem that way. It seemed like someone went, this was a mistake. Let's reverse this quick. It was a really bad piece of arse covering. But now they've said, no, it's going. It's done. We're done with it. There'll be no affiliate scheme for apps anymore. There will be on books and movies and albums and all the other things, but not on apps. That's going.
Yes. So you'd think that would, you know, any changes. Well, first of all, if you've totally, your business is totally reliant on that, then you've got a huge risk that needs to be addressed. Secondly, I can't believe anybody, and I'd love to be proved wrong, I can't believe anybody made a living out of being an affiliate, because to make money out of stuff like that, you have to spam the shit out of people so much with, you know, you'd have to set up domain names like they do with these affiliate schemes for other things, where you'll get a domain name set up for a specific, I don't know, genre of music or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So you'll find it in Google, accidentally go to it, click a link, bang, they get an affiliate payment. You would have to spam so much stuff to get people to click links and to get people to buy stuff.
I used to know someone they'd find the best affiliate rate, and then they would buy a domain like that. So let's say that the Nintendo Switch had a 5% kickback, which would be, you know, fairly decent. And what they would do is buy a domain name, put the stuff on it that just links straight to Amazon with an affiliate link, and they would buy Google AdWords so that it was always top of the search results for those specific things. So like buy Switch UK, for example, they'd buy that because if that phrase cost, say, £5, but they were getting a £20 kickback, it was totally worth it. And so they would just do that and make a fortune doing it. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, but that's with links, though. Do you get the money if they actually buy something, or do you get the money if they just link through or something?
No, you only get it if they buy something, which is why you had to be very, very specific as to the search terms you're looking for. So if you were typing buy Switch UK, then you sort of had a more high confidence that they were going to look to buy it right now rather than just browsing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think there was like some cleverness in terms of analytics and all that kind of dodgy stuff to work out if someone's actually going to buy it. But they would basically find things that had a high affiliate markup and then pay to advertise their website. Yeah. So it got to the top of the results and then make money that way, which was crazy, so but it worked. So
that would make sense. And that would make sense, the effort they've put into that. But when we're talking about, you know, games, Touch Arcade or
7% of a 99p game.
Yeah, Mac Rumors or whatever, whoever it is doing a review of an app and then doing a link, which is an affiliate, they're not going to make any money out of that. Sure, well, they make some, but it's going to be pennies. I mean, some people have already said, you know, I used to get a little, you know, payment every month. It wasn't much, but this is really disappointing. And it's like, seriously, you know?
It doesn't matter. Well, I think for Touch Arcade, they were making a lot of money off of it because they've had problems before with this because they had an iPhone app. And then Apple came out with a rule which was that you can't link to apps on the App Store from your app. That you can't provide a directory service. So you can't have... What they were doing is basically going, here are a list of all the games on the iPhone, and you can tap them, you can see our reviews, you can see stuff on the forum, and you can tap here to go to the App Store to buy it with the same affiliate link scheme. And Apple were like, no, you can't be a directory service anymore in an app. And there were a load of people that got caught out by this, because I seem to remember that in Overcast, they had linked to other podcast apps, as if to say, like, you know, we think we're the best podcast app, but if you don't like this one, here's some other ones that are good that you should try, with links to them.
Right.
And that got rejected, and Apple were like, nope, you can't link to other apps. You can't link to other apps that aren't your own. You can link to other apps you've made, but you can't link to other ones, which is such a weird rule, but there you go. They didn't want to have these directory services that made it look like an app store. But because of that, I mean, people would go to that website and then buy games for it because they, I mean, that's where they learned about it, and then they would click through to the App Store to go and buy it, which makes sense. And they were probably pulling in quite a lot of money because they had a lot of people going there, a lot of people clicking. It's only pennies a time, but that adds up dramatically if you've got the audience that Touch Arcade probably has. The issue I have with it is, I mean, A, like you say, there is an element of, if your business is solely dependent on this sort of thing, that's not great. No. And they tried to diversify. When they had that change of percentage a while back, they started launching a Patreon and did all that sort of stuff. And they said in a post the other day that dropped off pretty quickly, and they tried other things, it's all dropped off. But I have very little sympathy because, I mean, I tweeted at the beginning of the week about this. I went to the Touch Arcade site from my RSS feed because I was like, oh, well, click on that, interested in that. And first of all, there was a blank page and I had to scroll down. Then there was a full screen advert that just said, keep scrolling to get to the content. Then there was a title that took up the entire screen on an iPhone X. Then there was the article, and then underneath that was like those really sketchy ads that are like, hey, do this one trick on your head to make your hair, blah, blah. And then there was comments, and then there was about 20 more of those ads. I fired it up in the developer tools, and it took 8 seconds to load on a 380 meg connection. It made something like 300 requests, and then once the page was loaded, it made 10 network requests a second.
Wow.
That never stopped. Just kept going and going and going and going. All like ad tracking. And I've got an ad blocker. And it was still a load of them were getting through. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with you that you would do this? I mean, it just looks awful. And so when they're like, oh, I'm not getting any money from Apple anymore for our affiliate scheme, I look at it and just think, well, I'm not surprised. I mean, your website is a piece of shit. It's horrible. Yeah. Like, there are ways of doing advertising that are not utterly terrible. I don't mind them getting sponsorships. Like, you'd think that would be where they'd make most of their money. Like, game developers want to promote their game. They are a site that reviews games. There's a slight conflict of interest, but it's easily dealt with. You'd think that's where they'd make the most of their money from, not from a tiny kickback from Apple. So I have absolutely no sympathy at all, because it's just not... While the content of the website is fairly good, the way that they have done it and the things that they have done to it have just made it look awful. So,
yeah, you need to make better ways of making money. I mean, like you say, I mean, this is why I didn't realize it was still a thing that they got this. I just assumed that sites like this would either put crappy adverts everywhere or do sponsored posts or do tasteful ads or featured advertorials or whatever you call them. I didn't realize that this was actually a thing. So it just surprises me. But like we've said, I mean, it's easy to sort of sit here and go, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. But I'd be, it's like us having one client. I know that you schedule things in, but that's different because you've scheduled work in. You don't have one client you work for and don't schedule anything else. Do you know what I mean? You don't have...
Well, yeah. In freelancing terms, we call that a whale. If you have a whale client, like a big blubbery client who just gives you money constantly, and you sit there and go, oh, this is great, and you make a ton of money off them for ages and ages and ages, and then suddenly they go out of business, or they shut down, or they sell to someone and they don't want to work with you anymore, and now you're up shit creek because you don't have a client, and that was your sole income, was you were basically working for someone. And then you're stuffed. And that happens an awful lot to freelancers. I've seen that happen numerous times. And they're like, oh, what do I do? Oh, I need to I need to go and update my website now and put all the work I've been doing, because they've not bothered updating their CV or their website or doing blog posts. They've done nothing. And so then they've stagnated. They're not at the top of the search terms anymore. No one can find them. Anyone that looks at them is like, why were you doing this website for 5 years? Like, what do you know about Siri shortcuts? Oh, nothing. Client didn't do anything about that. And you're stuffed. Like, you need to be diversified as a freelancer.
Yeah, now I'm pretty sure we work differently. You have like one client you work with at a time, don't you? You sort of schedule work for a month.
I say that. I tend to juggle.
Okay, cool. So that's basically what I do.
I say to people that I won't do that, but I mean, it always happens because it's impossible. I mean, if I say, okay, I'm going to start with a new client on the 1st of September, and my current job, let's say it finishes perfectly on time and I'm done by, you know, the 28th of August. Well, you launch it on the App Store and then they're like, oh, can you just make this quick tweak? And it's like, well, no, I'm busy for the next month with this client. Yeah, yeah. And I find that when people, sometimes clients get asked about it, like, oh, well, we don't want you working with anyone else while you're working for us. Your time should be solely devoted to us. I'm like, what do you want to happen when you go live? Do you want to come back to me for fixes? Yeah, of course. Well, there you go then. Are you going to pay me my full day rate with no questions asked, book me out for blocks of time during that period?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I just want you to do small bits here and there. Right, there you go then. So, fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah, which is pretty much what I do. So, I tend to take on too much, which is my biggest problem. But yeah, I multitask between stuff. But I'm in that situation where I do have a kind of whale, which I have a retainer that I do, which is guaranteed, you know, income every month for a particular client, which gets usually renewed yearly. But this is the thing. I can't guarantee that. I don't know if it's going to get renewed every year. So I always make sure that I've got other stuff going on. I've got other work coming in and I've got that means, because I didn't get burnt, but I learned that lesson when I first started freelancing 4 or 5 years ago, where I had a couple of clients on a retainer. One was only about a 3-month contract, so that was bound to end, but the other one kept going. And that probably went on for a couple of years. And it was, you know, I got used to it. I still did some project work and some other work, but that was what I relied on as my income. And then that ended. I had that moment when, even though it was crazy because I had loads of inquiries coming in, I had work coming in and I had money in the bank, I had savings, you know, it was all fine. But it was that psychological thing of, oh, I haven't got that regular income anymore. I've got no more predictive income. And then what happened was I took a sort of year out doing just normal project work. And then actually the same client came back to me a year later and we started up again. But basically in that year, I was fine. Everything was fine. I still had predictable income each month because I had project work to do. But there was that psychological thing of, oh my God, you know, what am I going to do? And it all worked out fine. But as long as you make sure that you've got that, like you say, you diversify enough with different clients and projects and switch between. And exactly what you said, you know, the way projects work is, you know, you might send a build to a client and then you're waiting to hear back from them. Now, you may still work on future things, you know, other features, but you also might stop. And you don't want to be stopping and having no income. So that's where I'll switch to something else. So
yeah,
I'll
just have something else to fill in the cracks. Almost.
Exactly. So, and that's my biggest problem is I take on too much.
I mean, it's very easy. I mean, I'm the same. I think for both of us, we get far more work in than we can do. Like, we're very lucky that we get to turn clients away, which is wonderful. I love saying no to clients, to say, no, I'm not interested in that project. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
We have money. We want to hire you. It's like, I don't want to work on it. It just didn't excite me. Sorry.
Yeah, I think
here, try Jason. That's what I usually say.
Exactly. It's interesting. I mean, it can sound very very cocky, very arrogant, and all this stuff when you're talking to people sometimes. But I think when you are in demand, it does change the way that you approach work, so that, you know, when I get someone coming, I want another version of Instagram or I want another version of WhatsApp, it's like, you know, that's not going to push me, that's not going to challenge me, I'm not interested in that. Whereas if it's an app that has some sort of, you know, specific interest, or there's a thing you haven't done before or whatever,
I was going to say, like, if you do have to have a big whale client, the thing that you should be doing is only working for them 4 days a week. And the other day, or even if it's just half a day, and you do 4.5 days for them, the other half a day, do stuff like watch the WWE or build a side project or write blog posts or do something that keeps you current. Because when that whale disappears, then you've still got, you know, a website that is up to date with blog posts about all the newest stuff. You basically want to still be getting inquiries when you have a whale client. Now, don't ever put on your website, oh, I'm completely unavailable at the moment, don't bother contacting me. Yeah. Don't do that. it's better to have people email you and you turn them away, because then you can see the flow coming in. You can see, you can judge it for yourself. You can look at it and go, okay, well, I'm getting 5-6 inquiries a month, for example, that seem like good inquiries that I'm turning away. Whereas if you don't do that, you don't know how much work is out there. And so if your client suddenly disappears and you're like, oh, it's all right, some job will come along any minute now, and then it doesn't because you didn't bother to keep your website updated or anything else. And so you have to be able to judge when that happens how long it is going to be until someone comes along to give you work. And the only way of knowing that is to keep that door open, even if you're going to shut it as soon as they contact you. Because otherwise, how you know?
Well, exactly. And also, in some cases, you might be, you might get that, because what will typically happen is you'll get that inquiry in where someone's basically qualified. They've got the money, they've got the budget, they want to go ahead. This is a done deal, effectively. And you sort of think, oh my God, you know, I'm really busy, but this is a really good, you know, opportunity, whether it's the money or the project or whatever. And sometimes it's all right to say, look, I really want to do this, but I've got this other stuff on. I'm not going to be able to do this for like a month or two. And a lot of the time when I've said that to people, they're like, that's fine. Because, we can wait. We want to work with you. We can wait. Or, well, that's fine because we've got some other things we need to put in place anyway.
I had one client.
So that works for us.
I had one client I was supposed to work with immediately. They were hiring me. We were doing the contracts. They hadn't sent me the deposit yet, but they were just about to. And then I got called up for jury service, and it was going to be 2 months because it was a big case. And I was like, I'm pretty sorry about this, but I've been called up for jury service. I'm not going to be free for 2 months. And they're like, no problem, we'll wait. And then they ended up being a whale client for me, essentially. I worked with them for years. Yeah. I still do the odd bit of work for them now. But they were great. So it does happen. But you're right when you say, like, turning work down, it's important to find a job that has, like, stuff that's new that you've not worked on before. For the same reason, it keeps you fresh and lets you work on new things. So like when iBeacons came out, I had a client that wanted to do stuff with beacons, and it's like, this is paying less than this other job where they want me to build like an Uber style thing, but that's boring. Yeah. This thing is exciting and new, and even though I'm going to have to do a bit of travel to go to some meetings and stuff, it's an exciting project because I'm going to get to play with beacons, and I want to because I'm interested in them. So I took that job.
Exactly.
So it's worth doing, because then I got quite a few bits of work on the back of it. Because then in my portfolio I do work with Bluetooth beacons, and here's all my testing, and I had like blog posts about how I did the testing, which was crazy. I had to basically go to the co-op and buy some like Chinese takeaway boxes, you know, like the metal,
oh, the silver things,
the ones with the foil lid, because I had to keep putting beacons inside it to make them disappear, because otherwise I had to keep walking out of the room to get out of the range of them to trigger the things. And then I needed to be tethered to Xcode for it to work. And it's like, nope. So I looked like I was crazy. I had all these lines of foil in my office, and I was just like wrapping stuff up in foil and dumping it in these little foil pots so I could test everything. But I did a blog post about that, and then they got me loads of work. That's why it's important to do other things. You can't just stick doing one large client with not necessarily innovation, but when you're not doing anything new. You're just grinding through the usual stuff.
And also, when you do, and I've had this recently, well, in the last year, where you do get into a situation where you've taken on too much, because it does sound very, it's a very first world problem of, you know, you're getting stressed because you've actually got too much work to do and get too much stuff done and too many people reliant on you. When you get in that situation sometimes, it's possible and actually okay to just go, I can't do this. And pull out, you know, and
I've done that a few times.
Yeah. There was a client I had that came in. It was a really cool opportunity to write it was an incident report system for a private ambulance. It was basically a web app that would be, or a web and mobile app that would be sold to private ambulance firms. So it's like a generic system that could get, you know, rebranded and retooled for different people, but it effectively let them do their incident reports on iPads. So it would look up. You could. It was really cool. You could sort of pick a body, have a picture of a body, and pick the parts where they were injured and stuff, and fill in all the details. And it all went back into a big back end and everything. And I started working on it and started working on the sort of UI of it and putting it together. And it was taking up time, but it was interesting. But it was getting stressful because they were basically wanting to get a schedule together. They were pushing me for sort of, you know, dates of when it would be done. And I'd taken on too much, and I was getting really stressed with it because I had too much other work on. And it got to that point where they just said, look, you know, this is where we need to be. If you if you can, you work to this or not. If you can, great. If you can't, that's fine. And I was like, I can't. And it was very amicable, you know, handed over the code that I'd done and they paid me for the work I'd done and that was it. And it,
wow.
the you can't imagine the relief you feel.
Yeah.
I think part of it was, I seem to remember from the conversation, it was almost like, this is the schedule we need you to work to. And you know, and it wasn't really them saying you don't have to. I think they were quite surprised when I said, I can't do that. I think I'm going to pull out, sort of thing. But they were like, fine. They were appreciated the fact that I couldn't do it. It was early enough to pull out without it being a big problem. And I just felt so fantastic afterwards, even though I just turned away a good chunk of money, because there was still probably about another 20 grand or something of money to earn.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't do it. You know, it was just, and all that would have happened was that I would have pissed them off. It would have all fallen apart. We'd have fallen out big time. And, you know, you don't want any of that situation. That's even worse. And so I just felt, as soon as that email came in, it was like, hand over the code, signed a little thing that like almost like an ND, not an NDA, but it was almost like a, you've got, you know, they wanted me to sign something.
You have the rights to this now.
They've got the rights to the code, even though it was all, you know, whatever. So that was all fine. And I wasn't going to come back to them with any copyright claim or anything like that. And they were fine. And yeah, it was very amicable. And I felt just bloody amazing afterwards, because now all that stress had gone and I could focus on the other stuff. So it's all right to do that, you know.
I've not done it for a long time, but I had a while ago, probably around like 2011, 2013 sort of period, I'd taken on too much work. So I'd started getting far too many people getting interested in my work. And so previously I would say yes to every job because I needed every job. And at this point I didn't need them all, but it's like, oh, look at all the money I can make. Yes, I'll take that one. I'll take that one. I'll take that one.
Exactly.
And I won't work on any of them. I'll, I need to do some work. Jesus, there's so many projects. And sometimes there were a couple that I just turned around and was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. Here is the code that I've done so far and here's your money back and we're done. I just don't want to work on this project anymore. And it does feel so much better afterwards. It's
yeah.
Like, good. That's a weight lifted. Don't do it so much anymore just because I've scheduled my time better generally. Sometimes it is better to take the financial hit and just get rid of a client that you know is going to be a pain in the ass or something that's going to take ages and ages and ages. So it's definitely worth doing sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, the worst ones are the ones where you take something on and there's no real discussion of timeline other than, yeah, we should be able to launch this year and I've given you a rough time scale of, say, 3 months or whatever. And then you get that awesome email back for the client after they've sort of paid you a deposit and you started work, which was, hey, we've got an event coming up in so-and-so. We'd really want to show something there. Or, you know, we're meeting up some clients next week and we want to show them some screens. And you're like, I haven't done anything yet.
No.
You know, we never talked about this. Exactly. So it'll be like, no.
I've had that a few times. I'm just like, no, it's not ready. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's disappointing. It's like, well, I'm disappointed that you're a twat, but.
Yeah,
what can you do?
Or it's the agency work. If you take on, I tend to try not to do this. It's that agency work where I remember one of the first jobs I did was through an agency to do. It was a hairdressing. It was a hairdressing app. So basically, it was for I probably can talk about it now, but it was for Weller, and it was a system where they could have these rebranded apps that sold into different hairdressers that are part of this Weller network. And, you know, they could use it to book opening times and book an appointment and do all that sort of stuff and look up products or whatever. So it was like a cookie cutter type app, but it would be a separate app in the app store for each of these things.
Sure.
And that was through an agency. And you just got these wonderful emails where it would be like, you know, yeah, we told the client that this will be ready on Monday. And it was like Friday. And I'm like, why'd you tell them that?
You probably should have told them that then.
Yeah. Why'd you tell them that? Well, we got a meeting with them and they wanted to be able to see it. Well, I haven't told you when it's going to be ready. You know, some extra features or something they wanted. I said, you need to go back to them and tell them that, you know, it's not going to be ready and you're not going to show them. But we can't do that now. We've told them. It's like, that's not my problem.
You know, my
relationship is between me and you, and your relationship is with the client, and you need to manage the client better rather than, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be more like I'm being with you. I've got a client in the States that I haven't done some work for a couple of months because that sort of phase has been done. But they were terrible at managing their client. It was a law firm and it was an app for a law firm. And it was one of these, like, you know, they've got this problem with an app in the live store, live app in the store, and they need it fixed today, immediately. And it's like, that's not, and we told them they can. It's like, that's not possible. A, I can't fix it right now. And B, I can't submit it and get it approved to the app store immediately. You know, it's not going to work like that.
So,
yeah, you know, I can schedule it in on Thursday and I can submit it, you know, Friday, and it'll be ready probably next week. That's up to Apple. you know, it just drives me nuts. And it's that whole thing of digital project managers, which, you know, I have a real bugbear with, because most of them are just idiots. And
there
have
are
no
very, very few. I mean, a project has to be really interesting for me to agree to work through a third party. So yeah. I like to work directly with a client in order to avoid these problems. Because a mutual project we both worked on, which I won't mention, that every fucking year, that is the problem, where something has been said to the client that can't be done or shouldn't be done, or, oh, the client wants this. And I go, well, that's a stupid idea. It's like, yeah, but I've told them they can have it. And it's like, oh, why did you tell them you can have it? It's annoying. You know, let's make the app vibrate every couple of seconds when you load it. That won't piss people off at all, thinking that they've got notifications. Great idea. So it infuriates me.
I love stuff like that, yeah.
So, I hate working through someone else. If there's an interesting project, or if I think that the person that has their head screwed on, which does happen, then I will do it. But a lot of the time, I'm just like, no, I'm not working through the hassle. And if I do, I will bump up my rate significantly for the overhead that I know will be there, because there will be hassle. So I had somebody email me a little while ago, and she was like, oh, hey, really love your website, love your work. I'm building up this network of freelancers to work on this project for this agency, and tell me your day rate and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, you've clearly not read my website, because my day rate is on there. So I just increased it by 50% and never heard back from her. So, because I figured if you can't be bothered to actually read the bit on my contact page that's in bold, then your spec is going to be terrible, and it's going to be very, very difficult to work with you. So yes, let's add a 50% overhead to that. But no, infuriating. I hate working through people. Just
the other one is the other one you get is you know, where they can we get an update on what's happening? It's like, yep, this is the update, and then the next minute they'll want a phone call to discuss. And it's like, we want a status update. And it's like, well, haven't I just told you that in the email? And I remember going on some calls because, you know, I'm not arsey at all. I remember going on some calls that I was basically forced into having this call. And then it's like, yeah, we just wanted to get a status update. And I would read back the email I'd sent them earlier. I would literally just read it, you know, just very, very robotic-like, and just read the email. And it's like, that. Oh, right. And it's like, well, that's the update. I mean, I'm not sure why we're having this call. And I have got out of a project before where I was working on a banking app for somebody through an agency, and they kept insisting that the digital PM kept wanting, you know, daily meetings, daily calls.
No,
and I'm like,
no.
I don't want to do a daily call. I can give you a one liner. Well, it was worse than that. It was the belt and braces. You know, they had a project manager. It wasn't Basecamp. I can't remember what it was called, but they had something, teamwork or something. They had some app which had all the tickets and everything being done, and it had, you know, the ability to comment and all this stuff in there. So I was being quite diligent, actually. I hate all this kind of stuff normally, but I was saying, okay, I'm working on this one, and I was putting a 50% through, and I was leaving comments saying it should be done on Tuesday. But I was doing all that, and then it was still, can we have a quick catch up today on where we are with everything? And I'm like, isn't that clear from teamwork? Isn't it clear that What you know, I put status in there, I put what I'm working on, I put a due date in. What are we going to discuss in a call? And that would be one where I would go in and I would say, yep, just hold on a second, let me go to teamwork, and then I would you know, read back exactly what I've put in there, because it was just unnecessary. And that sort of thing, when you sort of start talking about mental health stuff and things, that's what pisses me off. You know, that stuff depresses me, and I then hate working on the project. And I Because calls are, you know, we're both, you're probably much more worse than me in terms of not wanting calls.
I refuse point blank. I say no.
Yeah, I will take calls and do calls, but I will do them at scheduled times. If someone phones me while I'm in the middle of code, I don't care if it's a new inquiry or not, I will just hang up. I'm not going to interrupt what I'm doing, because, you know, you know what it's like. You're in the middle of something, you're trying to solve a problem. Usually in my case, I've ripped apart a piece of code, I've now completely broken it, and now I need to fix it again. And then
I'll give you a very, very quick aside, just because it amused me so much today. I had an email yesterday of a client saying, hey, can you give me your number again so I can call you? The number on your website doesn't seem to be working. I don't have my phone number on my website. The only number I have on my website is my company number. And he's like, it's one digit short. Because my company number starts with a 7. So I think they just assumed it was a mobile number. And I was like, Jesus. The last time we spoke was on a Google Hangout. I'm not phoning you. No, we don't need to discuss this at all.
Well,
Well, I'm not giving you my phone number. No.
Pretty much consistently, every single time I get a phone call that comes through Skype, which normally means it's come through the website, and I hit no because I'm just busy or whatever, 9 times out of 10, 2 minutes later, an email will come in saying, hi, I just tried to call you. I'm really interested in getting an app done, blah, blah, blah. Then that's great because I'll just continue the conversation in email. You know, do you have a spec? Do you have budget? All this sort of thing. Get it qualified. You know, I will answer calls sometimes, but it's just funny how it's like self-solving problems. It's like when you either work with people or have employed people in the past who have an issue, and for some reason, either you're on holiday or you're away or you haven't got to respond. It's that funny thing you get where someone will say, oh, I'm having a real problem with this. Do you know what's going on? And you just won't answer for whatever reason. And 10 minutes later, an hour later, whatever the time scale is, they'll suddenly come back with, oh, it's okay, I fixed it now. You know,
yeah,
they just,
yeah, yeah.
Because if they know you're there, they're going to contact you and ask you. But if you're not, they'll deal with it and get on with it. And it's funny how that works with this sort of thing. You know, I tend to communicate most of the time when I'm dealing with suppliers or dealing with, if I'm phoning up, you know, trying to book a hotel or whatever, I will usually email or use some messaging system or whatever they've got rather than call. I just find calling is just, you know, you're sitting there waiting for someone to answer. It's just a pain in the ass. I'd rather just blast an email out. And that's, I mean, maybe I'm working by myself for so long now, I've just become more introverted like that, because I guess in the past I'd be like, I remember working with jobs where I'd have a car phone and I'd be that annoying
on the
guy.
Phone all the time.
I would be that annoying guy who was driving along bored because I'm driving to see a client. I remember when I used to work for a CAD company years ago and I had a little team working with me, and my boss used to do it to me. I'd always get phone calls from him in the car and I'm thinking, great, he's bored again because, you know, he's just decided to phone all the
staff. I imagine you as being more of I imagine you having like the original iPhone where it had the Bluetooth speaker. Do you remember that it came, you could buy a special charging dock that
had that Bluetooth.
I bet you did. I can imagine you walking around with a single Bluetooth earpiece in, just walking around, yeah, I'm on the phone. Walking around the place, just chatting.
In those CAD days, I was definitely, when I sort of managed this little team, and I was a dealer account manager, so I was sort of in sales and technical sales. I was doing demos and things. I was suited and booted. I was in the company car. I had the car phone, and I was just that. Yeah, I was. If there was Bluetooth then, I'd have had a Bluetooth thing in. But I was definitely that annoying guy phoning back. It wasn't my secretary; she was like a shared secretary. But like phoning back to the secretary, go, can you do that? Can you write a quick, letter to so and so? Because it was all bloody. Even though I think it was emails back then, everything was letters. In the early 90s, I think it was late 80s. But I was definitely that annoying person. So whenever you got a phone call from me and there was like noise in the background, it was like, oh, great, he's in the car. He's bored. He's on the way somewhere and he wants me to do something for him. Or it'll be that would be the funny one. You'd be driving. And I used to get this from my boss, and I did it, where I would phone someone in my office to say, could you phone the client and tell him I'm going to be 10 minutes late? Like, what? You're phoning me. You're
Jason.
Phoning me. To
no.
ask me.
No.
No. That was the old days. Now, and then the funniest thing is, you know, mobile phones came out, and I remember remember the little Sony, it was an analog phone. It had no screen. It was a tiny little phone with a little flip down mic. It was the smallest mobile phone you could get, and it was just super tiny. It was completely useless because it had no screen, and you could dial numbers on it. That was pretty much it. But it was very small, and that was really cute. And I remember when I got mobile phones, I would want to use them all the time because they're amazing. You know, they're incredible. And now where we've got these devices like iPhones or whatever that are far more advanced, and all I want to do is put them on mute and turn them off all the time because you go from that sort of discovering these new devices and the fact that you can send text messages to someone across the world and all these amazing things to suddenly being bombarded with crap all the time. And I find now, like with this notification stuff with iOS 12, it's just nice sometimes to actually stick. There's been times actually where I've had a really good day and then I've realized I've put my watch on Do Not Disturb or my phone. And then I've realized there's been a load of messages and stuff, but it's been great because I haven't got them, you know? And it's this thing as well. It's this thing with instant, we're segueing a little bit, but it doesn't matter. It's this instant communication that people have, you know, like Skype, where people start chatting to you on Skype.
Slack. I hate using Slack.
Yeah, and it's IM. It's instant messaging. You know, people expect, and they expect it in email. When they send you a message, you know, I got an email from someone the other day, and then literally 20 minutes later, there was a follow-up email saying, I don't know if you got my last email. It's like, it's been 20 minutes.
Sometimes I reply to an email immediately, just save it as a draft, and then I'll wait 24 hours and then send it back, just to give a sense of this is how I work. I will not reply to your email immediately. There will be a day between each one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was a time when I used to only check emails twice a day, and that was actually great because you just got more done.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that do that, and it does work well. I've seen a few people reply to emails, and it just comes up like an autoresponder saying, I only look at emails at certain times, so you'll have to wait until then if you want to reply. But I don't know if I can get to that point yet. I do that myself without telling someone that that's what I'm doing, because I like to just gradually set the expectation. Because if I say, oh, I answer emails only at certain times, then I'm locked into doing that every day at a certain time, and I don't want to do that either.
you'll get an email 5 minutes after that time going,
it's 2 o'clock, why haven't you answered my email?
Yeah, I think awesome. I tried that experiment once for about a week, where I actually had an autoresponder saying I'm only going to respond twice a day or whatever, and it only lasted about a week because I just couldn't cope with checking email twice a day. But yeah, I mean, I can be terrible with some emails where I've got more into a habit now. Where an email comes in, I've responded to say, okay, I'll look at this and come back to you later or whatever, so that you don't get followed up. Or it's that thing at the beginning of the week that I do sometimes with clients where I'll say, just a quick update. This week I'm working on this, this, and this. Just to preempt that email that you get about 11 o'clock on a Monday of, oh, can you give me an update on what's happening this week or whatever? Just fire off the email straight away. So it just gives them an expectation for the week of when they're going to get something, and then you don't get sort of pestered every 5 minutes. That's always worked quite well for me.
A sensible plan. Anyway, I'm going to have to wrap up because I need to rush off, unfortunately. But
no worries.
A good chat. Nice to get some freelancing stuff in there for a change.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't even mention the fact that Apple's doomed this week. God, the market cap is way down, way down.
Yeah, well, let's give it. I mean, I'm not going to be able to do the next one in a couple of weeks, but we can do one after, and maybe by then they will be doomed.
So we'll certainly have a better idea of what they're about to announce in September.
Yeah, maybe we'll be on PCs by then. You never know.
Awesome, good chat, okay. Jason.
Adieu, see ya.